Tonight, we are going to finish this discussion one way or another. We're going to get to the end of the study of the Kings. And going forward, I'll be out next week. Doug has kindly said he would stand in my place next Wednesday evening to teach. And then the next Wednesday, we're going to get into a new discussion on some of the attacks or challenges the church faces from without and from within. And so we'll get into some of those challenging topics that you brought up. So that's what we're looking for going ahead. Tonight, we are going to continue looking in our study last week. Hey, Roger, can you just make that window active? Thank you, brother. In our last study, of course, we concluded the life and the reign of Josiah. He reigned for about 30 years, 31 years there in Judah. As we mentioned, he had a good reign, and he was very faithful. Following his death, his son Jehoahaz became king. Yeah, he only reigned about 3 months, and that was because Necho, the pharaoh of Egypt, the ruler of Egypt, came and he took him out of his place, and he set up another son of Josiah, Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim, we began to look last week, he began to reign about 608, and he reigned about 11 years until about 597. Those dates are really important. And when we talk about the history of Judah, we'll get into that as we get started tonight. So, Jehoiakim, as I mentioned, we're going to finish that up. He reigned about 11 years. And then we'll get into Jehoiachin. There's another one. He reigned for about 3 months. Actually, the interesting thing about Jehoiakim is 2 Chronicles said he got down to the day. He said it was 3 months and 10 days. So he was very specific in his rendering of that in about 597 BC. And then we'll look at Zedekiah or Mattaniah. Mattaniah was actually his Hebrew name. It was switched by the Babylonians. We'll look at that tonight. He reigned for a little while. For about 11 years as well, to about 586, very important year. And then we'll look at another guy with that. I don't have him up here, but I'll have him up later. Gedaliah. And we'll talk about him in just a little bit. So let's look at Jehoiakim. Again, let's go back to 2 Kings 23:34. At the end of that chapter, the text tells us that Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim. I didn't put this name up there, I probably should have. But again, Jehoiakim, his actual Hebrew name was originally Eliakim. But he decided to change his name and put him in place of Jehoaz. And then he takes Jehoaz away. There he dies in Egypt. And so the Egyptians get into the Judean politics of the day. Now, what's important to remember here is what's going on in the world at the time. Let me give you, I've got two charts. I'm going to give you the one, Doug, that you collected for me. If he'll pass those around. I want you to notice a little about the dates here. I'm going to get him to pass that one around, and then I'm going to get another one going. I've got two charts for you.
I did it on the way up here after I just passed. I can take that one to pass his basket. Come back.
I appreciate it.
You need one?
I've got one. Thank you, brother. So, this first chart is a timeline. Well, both of them are timelines, but this one is has got some different events on it. They're slightly different in their information, the two charts. But if you're looking at this one, I don't have it up here on the board, but I want you to notice it starts back before 600 BC. What's our time frame we're looking at? The Jehoiakim. What was the dates? 608 to 597. So this really gets us in the time frame here. Who's the prophet of the day, or who are the prophets?
Jeremiah
and Daniel. So you see that slight overlapping of those two. Daniel's important. Why? Or they're both important. But what's significant to remember about Daniel?
Exile to Babylon.
Yeah, so his whole writing deals with what? The exile to Babylon and then on into the Medo-Persian Empire.
Okay.
So, but he begins with being exiled. He was one of the original ones. So we're going to come back to that. So just so you hold that chart there. So what's going on in the world at the time, though? What happens in 612?
612
BC
is last week. Babylon and Assyria battled.
Yeah, so the fall of Nineveh. And Nineveh is right here. The yellow is the Assyrian Empire, right? So it's a little bit wider than the Babylonians. It's also a little bit more northern. But Nineveh was the capital of Assyria, which is where Jonah was sent, was to Nineveh.
Right.
I think about 100 years before this, about the approximate dates of Jonah. So the Babylonians come into to Nineveh, Nineveh falls, and so you've got kind of this really chaotic time period in world politics. Now, this little window gives Egypt a little bit of time to kind of get its nose stuck into world politics as well. It won't rise to the power of Babylon, but there's a shakeup. And so they're pushing some of their power onto Judah. And you notice Judah is a lot closer. Jerusalem's a lot closer to Egypt. And so they're able to come up there and to bully them about. And it happens a couple of times. But here you have Necho decide, I'm going to replace the king. While I don't know, the Bible doesn't tell us what his intentions are behind it. He wants to influence Judah. So, 612. Fall of Nineveh, very important day. Okay. That's a change in seed, right, in world power. So the Assyrians were world powers prior to 612. 612, the Babylonians come up and say, no longer are you the world power, now it's us. Now, if we go to 2 Kings 23:36, it says that Jehoiakim was 25 when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years. If you look on the chart up here on the board, of course, you'll see Jehoiakim. Well, first of all, Jehoaz rightly descended just under Josiah, but then it was given over to Jehoiakim. Well, eventually Jehoiachin will become king just for 3 months, and then a third son of Josiah will become king, Zedekiah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
We'll try to unpack some of this. Again, the text really notes him as these four kings, none of them rise to what we call to be a good king. And verse 37, 2 Kings 23:37 just tells us straight out, right? He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all his fathers had done. Of course, not talking about his father, Josiah, but men like Manasseh and those guys, he followed in their path. Not a lot about him, but there are a couple of things we just note. Again, talking about Egypt, trying to get into Judean politics or to exert influence over Judah. Verse 35 tells us what? Jehoiakim gave the silver and the gold to Pharaoh, probably indicating that that was something that Jehoiachin would not, or not Jehoiachin, but Jehoaz would not do. And so they said, okay, well, you're out. We're going to put this other guy in place. That's just my reading of it. But Jehoiakim says, okay, I'll do that. And then he did that and more. He exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land from everyone according to his assessment to give it to Pharaoh Necho. So they're paying basically mafia tax to Egypt. And it's what the mafia did, right? They go in the neighborhood and they say, hey, they come in, they rob your store, beat you up, and they come back and say, hey, you want protection? You don't want to be beat up anymore, right? So you give us a little sum and you won't get beat up. And so you pay a tax just to exist. That's kind of what Egypt's doing. You're going to pay us a tax. We won't come in and beat you up anymore. Now, that only works for a little while, right? What happens eventually? Well, either you get tired of paying the tax, or they want to raise up higher. That's what a bully always does. But sometimes bigger bullies come on the scene and more powerful. So for a time here, you've got kind of a world shakeup going on. How long does that last? Not very long. So if we go back to our chart, let's read this first and we'll go back to our chart. So in verse chapter 24, 2 Kings, verse 1, in his days, in Jehoiakim's days, Nebuchadnezzar does what? He came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant for 3 years. Then he returned and rebelled against him. So, if you look at the chart, about 606, some may have 605. So 606, 605, you have the first of three invasions. First of three. So the Babylonians have now taken power, and their influence is going to grow. You see on the chart here, their kingdom does not, it doesn't overcome the entire circumference of the Assyrians. You know, the Assyrians even were down here with Egypt. And I probably should have mentioned that. When Nineveh fell, what happened here? They were freed from the burden of the Assyrians. Well, Babylonians have come to power. They'll not reach all the way down to Egypt, but they will take a huge territorial gain. So the first time in 606. Now what happens in 606? Well, this is about the time, or it's in this first invasion that we believe Daniel and his friends are taken into captivity. So they'll come in, and it's, if you will, a power play. They come in, they take kind of control. Of course, at this point, what is Judah, military-wise? They're very weak. They're very weak. They've already been beat up by the Egyptians. They're really, it doesn't seem like to me much of a fight was put up. And so the text says, probably in a way to try to placate Babylon, the king says, and to get out from underneath the thumb of Egypt, because Babylon's more powerful than Egypt, I'll be your servant. And so that's what happens. But how long does that go?
3 years.
3 years, this kind of thing exists. Hiding stuff for myself. Alright, so if you go to 2 Chronicles 36, sorry, we'll be flipping between the two. I hope you've had a chance to read those chapters. But 2 Chronicles 36, let's go to verse 6. The text says, against him, against the king, Jehoiakim, against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, so again, he's telling that thing. king of Babylon, bound him in chains to take him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried part of the vessels of the house of the Lord and put them in the palace of Babylon. So after about 3 years, they come again in the second invasion in there. And this time they take the king with them. So if you look on your chart here, again, it has about 597, you give or take a little bit of time. Can't be super exact with the time frame, but in about some, you might see 603, 597, somewhere in there. They come in, they then supplant or exert more control over Judah. If we go back to 2 Kings 24, sorry, I'm having to piece these together to get a fuller picture, but 2 Kings 24, verse 2. The Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldeans. Who are the Chaldeans?
Babylonians.
Those are synonymous with one another. And bands of the Syrians, and bands of the Moabites, and bands of the Ammonites, and sent them against Judah to destroy him. To the word of the Lord that he spoke by his servant, the prophet. Surely this came upon Judah at the command of the Lord to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done, and also filled the innocent, also for the innocent blood that he had shed. For he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not pardon that. So God, because of the sins of Manasseh, what he did, and it's, I think it's significant, he purposely mentions the innocent blood. Now, I can't help but think about Matthew 18. What's Matthew 18 say? When the little children are trying to come up to Jesus, what do the disciples do?
They turn them.
What does Jesus say to them? He rebukes them and says what?
Let them come.
Let them come.
My kingdom.
Unless you become like one of these, you cannot enter my kingdom. And then he goes on to say, if anyone would harm one of these little ones, it would be better for him to have something tied around his neck away and thrown out to the sea. The innocent, God wants and has a strong desire to protect the innocent. And that innocent blood cried out. I think about God confronts Cain after his murder of Abel. What does God say to Abel?
What about him?
What?
His blood cries to him.
The innocent blood of Abel. I'm adding the word innocent, but I don't believe that's implied. The innocent blood of Abel cries out to me. You killed him. And so God is coming to punish. So if I can say the dates here. So 606, you have the first invasion. 597 approximately, you have the second. I think it's the 603 and then 597. You have the second invasion. So now twice they've come in. And then the second one, they take the king captive. Let's see. Let's go on to verse 5. Now the rest of the deeds of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the books of the Chronicles? Of the kings of Judah. So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his place. So you've got this transition in place here. It also mentions this in 2 Chronicles 36, 38 about his passing. I want to note one thing, is it notes the abominations that he did. Those are strong words. God, in assessing his life, calls his actions an abomination. So not a good reign at all. He reigned about 11 years, from about 608 to 597. That's about your time frame there with him. We do kind of, just to note world politics again here, just to bring that back in, notice 2 Kings 24:7. So what did Necho try to do? About 608, what did he do? Came in and replaced the king, put his own guy on the throne. He's trying to put his own hand in there. Well, 2 Kings 24:7 says, and the king of Egypt did not come again into his land, for the king of Babylon had taken all that belonged to the king of Egypt from the brook of Egypt to the river Euphrates. And so Egypt gets smacked back, and Babylonians assert their power.
You think that might have been tied to part of the point from Judah? Because some of Judah, even Jeremiah, talks about the people running away from Judah and going to Egypt, thinking they're going to escape the king of Babylon. Lo and behold, Jeremiah tells them, the king of Babylon said, come down here and set up right over this stone here where you're at, you know?
Well, it's interesting that a couple of times Judah tries to run to Egypt for help. Remember, Hezekiah even did that. And the king of Assyria said, that's a broken reed you're trying to run to. But it's amazing that Judah kept kind of doing that when all Egypt had done to them. And they had tried to run back to Egypt. Well, that's not going to save you. So Jeremiah has a lot to say about this. If I had time, we could get into Jeremiah 25, but I just don't have time. But I do encourage you to go back and look at that. All right, so let's look at Jehoiachin. 2 Kings 24:8. He was 18 years old when he became king. He reigned 3 months. Here again, you see he's the son of Jehoiakim. He'd be the grandson of Josiah. However, he reigns 3 months. We'll come back to this chart in a minute. We'll see Zedekiah. But short reign, didn't go very well. In just 3 months, it said he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his fathers had done. Even that short 3 month reign, you would think he barely get started in 3 months. And yet, what he did can be said to have been evil. It said, Second Chronicles. So, what year are we? 597. So, notice, 2 Chronicles 30:16. What happened in 597? In the spring of the year, King Nebuchadnezzar, sent and brought him to Babylon with the precious vessels of the house of the Lord, and made his brother Zedekiah king over Judah and Jerusalem. So now you have Babylon doing the same thing that Egypt did. They said, now we're going to take you out, and we're going to put your brother Zedekiah in your place. It would have been his uncle, I'm sorry. I believe it's his brother, but I think it was his uncle, but check me on that.
It was uncle.
Yeah, I believe it was his uncle.
I remember.
So let's go to 2 Kings 24:10 and following. So 597, you've got the second time they come in. They're going to take a bunch of captives. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. Nebuchadnezzar, verse 11, king of Babylon, came to the city while his servants were besieging it, and Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, gave himself up to the king of Babylon, himself and his mother and his servants and his officials and his palace officials. The king of Babylon took him prisoner in the 8th year of his reign, and carried, this 8th year, I need to check on that date. It said 3 months. I need to look at that year. Why it says 8th year. Oh, it's saying 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's. I got it, sorry. I had to read that again. And carried off all the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold in the temple of the Lord, which Solomon the king of Israel had made, as the Lord had foretold. It says, it goes on in verses 14 to say that he took away 10,000 captives, all the craftsmen and the smiths. Now, why would he especially be interested in the craftsmen and the smiths?
There's no rebuilding thing there.
What?
You can't rebuild anything, can't keep it up.
Yeah, and also, he would use them.
Right.
He would put them, he would take them away from Judah and put them into his own service. I want to note something he does in just a minute that we can learn from Daniel. It says, none remained except the poorest people of the land. He carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon. And then it goes on to say that he did all those. He even got the men of valor, about 7,000. About 1,000 craftsmen and metal workers, all of them strong and fit for war. Verse 17, the king of Babylon made Mattaniah. So Mattaniah is actually who?
His uncle.
His uncle. See, I don't know why the earlier says brother, but it was his uncle, Mattaniah. And he's Zedekiah is what the name that they give him. Now, there's something interesting that I think is important to note here. What the Babylonians did whenever they took a nation captive, what did they do?
Transplant.
They would, okay. So one of the big things, now the Assyrians did this too. I'm going to show you, the text shows us that the Babylonians went a step further. So when the Assyrians came in, they then took them and put them all around in here. They took away the captives, took them out of their land, all the Israelites. Well, when Babylon came in, they did the same thing, but they did something else.
They changed their names, didn't they?
Yeah. So, let's go. Well, you can look in the book of Daniel. Daniel brings this out when he talks about his own captivity, or when the book talks about it. Let's see. Daniel. So if you go to Daniel chapter 1, verse 6. So the text tells us, Daniel 1:6. Among these, talking about the captives, among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, of the tribe of Judah. The chief of the eunuchs of Babylon gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah he called Shadrach. Mishael he called Meshach. And Azariah he called Abednego. Now, why would he do that?
I'm trying to get them to leave their. What you were formerly told and trained in is of no account. Now you're changed. You're supposed to move over here to this new way of thinking and acting. These new names, you're not who you thought you were, you're now this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, from a human wisdom strategic standpoint, this makes a lot of sense what he's doing. He doesn't want them to be Israelites in Babylon, he wants them to be Babylonians. And isn't it fascinating that I would say the vast majority of Christians could not tell you the Hebrew name of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego? That's probably what they know them by. What were their names?
Hananiah,
Mishael, Azariah. That were their names.
Yep.
So was he successful?
No.
He was successful, not with those young men, but I think overall he was successful for a lot of the world. It makes sense what he's doing, because if he makes them into Babylon and the Babylonians, what's he doing? He's squelching what? Uprising, rebellion. Anytime you take a group of people captive, if they hold on to their former identity and have an affinity for that, where do they always want to go? They want to go back to that. They're going to be more likely to fight against it. Well, the Babylonians, to prevent that, one of their goals was, I'm going to change I'm not just going to change your location, I'm going to change your identity. Satan does that to us, doesn't he?
I knew he would say that.
Right? He tries to get us to change our identity. Now, Christ does that too, by the way.
Exactly.
He does it too.
Yes.
God wants us to be what?
Be transformed by the renewing of our minds.
Yes.
Have a new name.
He wants us to be a Christian, yeah. Right? He wants that to be our identity. However, if you ask most Christians, who are you? A lot of men are going to say what?
Whatever they do.
What they do for a living. I'm a carpenter. I'm an electrician. I'm a politician. I'm a mathematician. Right? A lot of men identify with what they do for a living. Well, women, I'm not a woman, so other women or women would know better about this, but I think they identify in other ways. I'm a mother, I'm a wife. But ultimately, at our core, who are all of us to be? Our first identity should be, I'm a child of God. I'm a redeemed sinner by the blood of Jesus Christ. I am a member of the church. And that's a fight that as Christians, we got to fight because Satan won't give up trying to change us.
Come on with that. See, within these foreign countries, I think we've got to understand that we are a foreign people in another land. But we are God's people in a foreign land sent here with a purpose, with a mission to change the world to put us in.
Yeah, and before becoming Christians, we might rightly say any number of things is our identity. Becoming Christian means I'm changing who I am. So I'll have more to say about that in the sermon coming. But I do think I wanted to note that. That was something that Daniel was going to have to fight against. They were trying to change him into Belteshazzar. That's who you are now. You're not a Jew. You're Belteshazzar. And the test would he give in? Let's go on. I want to finish this up. So you've got the second time they come in, and in 597, they take the vast majority of people captive. Says what? Who's left behind? Only the poorest. Why only the poorest? They don't have to support them, right? They've got a social service network. You know, they don't want to have to support them. Also, poverty is seen as what? Powerlessness, weak. I don't have to worry about them. But the men of valor, the craftsmen, I'm going to take you. Now, I'm just saying this is from their standpoint. I'm not saying that's what God sees us, but I think that's why the majority of the world sees people. If you're poor,
you're weak.
Yeah. And too many get into that. Mm-hmm. So, verse 27 through 30, in the 37th year of exile, Jehovah. This just kind of, I'm just tell you what goes on here. Jehoiachin, remember, he was taken into captivity. He spent about 37 years in Babylonian captivity. But one of the monarchs of Babylon decides to let him have some freedom. And so they even go as far as to give him a stipend or an allowance after 37 years of imprisonment. All right, so that ends the life or the reign of Jehoiachin. As we mentioned before, the Babylonian emperor puts Zedekiah, what was his Hebrew name?
Mattaniah.
He puts Mattaniah in as king. He reigns about 11 years. That's important. So 11 years, 597, what would be the end of 11 years? 586. Again, here's another king. 11 years, but 11 years that he served as an evil king, as the word would summarize it. You see here, he's the uncle of Jehoiachin, he's the son of Josiah. So you have now three sons of Josiah reign as kings. Again, he wasn't a good king. It goes on to say about him, he did not humble himself before Jeremiah the prophet. Jeremiah the prophet was prophesying during his time period. He tried to get him to repent. He would not. Verse 19, he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. So you have mirror image reigns of evil between him and Jehoiakim. And so God finally sends this last invasion. Verse 13, he also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, who had made him swear by God, and stiffened his neck and hardened his heart, turning to the Lord. The God of Israel really had nowhere else to turn. All the officers of the priests and the people likewise were extremely unfaithful, exceedingly unfaithful, following all the abominations of the nations. They polluted the house of the Lord. The one thing that had been left remaining standing was what? The temple. Just let me finish this up real quick. That was one thing left. Well, God, as a sign of his continuing patience, God, the text tells us in 2 Chronicles 36:15, that God had sent persistently to them prophets because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they kept mocking the messengers of God, despising his word, scoffing at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord rose against his people, until there was no remedy. Not underline that word no. There was no remedy left for God. And so God then would remove his house from the land. Let's see. So in 586, we don't have time to go through it all, but again, go back and read it. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, sends his army into the land. They come in and they just destroy it. Judah is decimated. They take more captives. Verse 3 of 2 Kings 25 says that there was no food for the people left. He came in and he just slaughtered the sons of Zedekiah. And eventually just burns the city down. Gedaliah was made governor. Another short reign, though, before he was killed. And then we end on one positive note. 2 Chronicles 36 gives us this, and we'll be done. The proclamation of Cyrus. Who's Cyrus? King of Persia. He is the first king, and he allows the people of Judah to go home. He sends out a proclamation. Who can tell me who led the first group home? Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel leads them back. What does Zerubbabel do? He leads the people back. Eventually, Ezra is sent. Sin brings another group of people. Where they live?
Where did they
live? That's important.
They're the priests.
They rebuild the temple.
Oh, yeah.
They rebuild the temple. So remember, Zerubbabel brings the people home. Ezra rebuilds the temple. Then Nehemiah rebuilds the wall, and then the law is read. Remember those three. What books would you look at for those?
Ezra, Nehemiah.
Ezra Nehemiah. All right, thank you all so much, I've enjoyed this study immensely. But as all good things must come to an end, I guess. Y'all are bringing us out, we get to move on to something different. We'll never do that. We'll dismiss for just a moment, we'll begin our devotional time.
Take it down.